all across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio. This is Veterans Radio.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone with VeteransRadio.net. We are recording today from the Legal Help for Veterans studio in Northville, Michigan. Legal Help for Veterans is a veterans disability law firm. You can reach us at 800-693-4800. We want to welcome to Veterans Radio today Jim Darga and Rich Lamb of the Pinckney Cyber Training Institute. Jim, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's certainly an honor to be a part of your broadcast.
You're the director of the Cyber Training Institute, and Rich, explain to us what your position at the Institute is.
Yes, my position, I'm the coordinator of cyber operations here at PCTI, and that basically handles anything virtual. So I deal with our curriculum both at the K-12 in a virtual setting and also for our adult populations, handle websites, and our net labs, any of our virtual capabilities. I'm the one that looks after those things.
Well, Jim, I first learned about what you're doing out there, and I thought, well, this is interesting. The veterans can now use their GI benefits towards a cybersecurity certification from the Institute. But before we get into that, let's start with what cybersecurity really is.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, if you were to go to a training facility and said you wanted to be a carpenter or a plumber or work on HVAC, everybody knows what that is. But when you start talking about cybersecurity, it is fairly nebulous. And a lot of it starts right with network administration, you know, because there's a lot of pieces, you know, you need to have a sound network that doesn't have any unnecessary exposure to vulnerabilities. There's, you know, physical security in terms of everything from, you know, how's your equipment displayed? Can people look over the shoulder of others and collect passwords? There's a lot of different ways that cybersecurity impacts the network, and a lot of it is really the endpoint user as well. A lot of the big breaches that you see on the news, it's really pretty amazing because that's how a lot of data is breached, is through like an endpoint user. It could be a soda pop machine, or it could be a person's laptop, and that's how, you know, a nefarious person could get into an actual database and work their way through a complete network. It's really interesting because there's so many different aspects. It's the software, it's the hardware, physical security. There's a lot of different ways you have to approach, you know, containing your data, whether it's in the cloud or whether it's in your own server system. There's a lot of different pieces to it.
Well, and this is a different area or career than one might think of as computer coding. Cybersecurity is something different than writing code programs to make the computer do things, isn't it?
It is. In fact, it's kind of it's the coding that in many cases creates the problem, because when software is written for all kinds of Internet of Things, the devices, up until just really recently, the security aspect of the coding really wasn't even considered. And I go back to my background. I worked at Ford Motor Company in engineering many, many years ago. And, you know, we're working on electronic engine control systems. You know, we were really excited how we could get a CPU to control fuel delivery, spark timing, and emission controls on a vehicle. And we never thought about, okay, what if someone else wants to hack into this and take control? And you know, you just don't think of that. But now a lot of software developers are putting more emphasis on the security aspect of the software, so it isn't as easily breached and data collected, and it's just something that people never considered. So you've got millions, tens of millions of products that are out there that aren't really, the software is not secure.
Well, that's interesting, because what we're talking about is a field that probably didn't really exist a decade ago. It's a brand new field that's developing to allow us to protect all of our devices and our Internet of Things. This whole notion of cybersecurity is new, and that's kind of what you guys are tackling, is this need for training in a brand new field.
It really is. Yeah, you're absolutely right. 10 years ago, if you went online to look for a position in cybersecurity, there probably weren't any posted. But now there's thousands of positions that are going unfilled because it's really cross-industry as well. And that's something that people don't realize. Cybersecurity, it permeates all aspects of our economy, whether you're protecting critical infrastructure or when you're considering autonomous vehicles, or when you're thinking about Department of Defense contractors. Cybersecurity crosses all career pathways now. Now, before it was, you had your network person, when this whole thing got started, the person that was, maintaining the network, oftentimes they kind of got shouldered with the cybersecurity responsibility, make sure your passwords are protected and that kind of thing. And it's going so far beyond that now. It's like anybody that does any work in a technical field really needs to have a background in cybersecurity.
And certainly any of our veterans coming out of the military have had this preached to them over and over again in the last 5 or 10 years about the importance of cybersecurity. And in fact, they're talking about standing up a whole cyber division to deal with this. But as we come back to its application in the civilian world, what type of curriculum is involved in the training that is being done at the Pinckney Cyber Training Institute?
We have two paths that we are working with our veterans on. The first path is cybersecurity, vulnerability assessor, and ethical hacker. Our second path is a cybersecurity analyst. Each of those paths have four courses. The first three courses in both paths are the same. Our students will take an IT Essentials class, which is all about computer hardware. And then from there, they take a Networking Essentials course, which teaches them the basics of network. As Dr. Dargis said, we were firm believers that in order to protect the network, you have to understand the network. The third class is called Security Principles, and that just talks about the basics of setting up a secure network. And their fourth class that they can take, they have two options. If you're going with the cybersecurity analyst route, the fourth class you'll take is called Cyber Operations, which is all about incident handling and incident monitoring. If you choose the Cybersecurity Vulnerability Assessor path, your last class will be a vulnerability assessment and ethical hacking course. Each of those courses, no matter what path you're on, prepares you for different industry certifications, either from CompTIA, Mile 2, or from Cisco Systems.
And nowadays, in the whole area of the cyber world, certifications is really the badge or the demonstration of having the skill set, isn't it, Rich?
Yes, it is. People in the industry look for certifications that definitely will draw attention to your name. But more importantly, they look for knowledge. So not only do they look for certifications, but they do also look to see that you've had these courses and just showing that you've demonstrated some knowledge in this area will definitely get you in the door.
Dr. Darga, can you talk about job availability in the cybersecurity area, both locally and nationally, and maybe give us some flavor of what the sort of pay and benefits of these kind of jobs are?
Oh, absolutely. There's national studies right now that predict that there's going to be somewhere between 2.5 and 3.5 million job vacancies by 2021. And these jobs actually pay, on the average, about double what the national average is hourly wage. So, you're looking at starting positions that are going to be, somewhere between $40 to, $50 per hour. He said these are high quality jobs, and in Michigan alone, it's estimated that there'll be 181,000 jobs available.
These are staggering numbers, and again, for a field that didn't exist a decade ago. So that's why I really wanted to talk about this. And Rich, maybe you can talk a little bit about what type of skill set or knowledge does one have to come into the institute with to be able to be successful in working their way through the curriculum?
Mm-hmm. Well, really, they just have to have a passion or a desire to learn this area. So we take the assumption that they have very little cybersecurity knowledge, and we start them from the ground floor with that first class, which is all about building a computer hardware and software. And then we kind of stack up their knowledge on top of that. After they learn about the computer, their next area to go into is to learn about how networks are built. And then from there, we take them to a general security course, and then they can split off into what area specialty they want. So the assumption is that they don't have much knowledge in the area of cybersecurity. They just have a desire to learn.
But I don't have to be a math whiz or a coding genius to go down this route and make myself employable in the field of cybersecurity.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And as you look forward, do you see these people progressing through the program, coming right out of high school, community college, worked in the real world doing something else before they find this pathway? Kind of what do you think the ideal mix of student is?
Well, it's interesting that you should raise that question because, I mean, we have an outstanding program here for our high school students. And part of our program for high school, our students are actually earning college credit three different ways. All of our students earn articulation credit with the local community college, Washtenaw Community College. But two other options our students have for the day school are for early middle college, so our students can defer their graduation by a year and earn their associate's degree through their 13th year of high school. Or they can actually earn direct credit through Eastern Michigan University, which is a center for excellence in information assurance. So those students in the classes that they take in high school lead towards industry-recognized certifications. So even though most of our high school students go to a post-secondary institution, if they choose not to, they actually could go directly into the workforce. So then the other pieces of our operation, we also provide technical training support for the Michigan National Guard, and then we have other courses available, Department of Defense-approved courses for individuals, whether they're currently in the field and they need to upgrade their technical skills and credentials, or if they want to enter the field. We have courses for those individuals as well. So it's really a combination. So it could be someone coming out of high school. It could be someone that's in the field that needs upgraded, or an adult that wants to enter the field. So there's different pathways and gateways they can go through.
Well, let's turn our attention to the veteran cohort. You have a sort of a new arrangement or curriculum and partnership. Tell us who you're in partnership with here and the focus that has with respect to veterans.
Yeah, we're putting that program together right now. And again, we're not doing it in isolation. We have support from other outside agencies, including Michigan Works, Work Skills Corporation. And we're going to be meeting with another partner in a couple of weeks here to see if we can add them to our support network. But what we want to do is actually get the word out and, let veterans know that we actually are approved under the GI Bill, that they can use their benefits. We're actually, as far as I know, we're the only high school in the United States that has been given that honor and privilege to work with veterans in this capacity. So it's a service we want to provide them because the careers are fantastic. And they're when you're coming out of the service, I mean, you've got a completely different mindset than someone that's in the civilian world. Those veterans are coming out of the military, it doesn't matter what branch, they're with the mindset that they're going to defend individuals. They're going to defend our nation. They have the mindset that if there's a problem, they're going to go directly at it. They're not going to veer away from it like a lot of people would. So we're in the field of cybersecurity. If they're working, for example, in a security operations center, and they're going to be honed in and they're going to focus in on anticipating issues as they arise. And when they do, they're going to be mentally prepared to go right after it and address the issue.
Well, I think you're right that our veterans take security of all nature, physical, cyber, very seriously. Obviously, they've dedicated a portion of their life to defending the United States, and through that have really been educated and understand some of those risks, and maybe have been around the world to see some of those risks or been involved in defending cyber attacks or seeing the implications of cyber attacks. Is that one of the reasons you are focusing on the veteran population as potential candidates, or did that come out of the work that you've been doing with the Michigan National Guard?
It is a combination of things. One, it is partly because of the work we do with the Michigan National Guard, and you know, we get to see how they excel in this field, and we work very closely with them. But it's also partly, like, as I mentioned, how their skill set and their mindset aligns with this type of work. But also the third piece to that was when you read the research on that segment of our population, and many of our veterans, they see the challenge. It's a difficult transition from the military life to the civilian life. And we want to help provide support with that and guide them into an exciting career that they're going to find rewarding. And so hopefully that'll reduce some of the challenges they're facing in that transition.
We hear a lot on Veterans Radio about transitional issues, because when you're in the service, you know what the mission is and you feel you're part of something bigger than yourself. And when you come back and you get a civilian job and you just feel like you're part of a retail machine or some other, more pedestrian business, you just don't feel like you're really part of something worthy that you should dedicate yourself to. But I sort of get the feeling that part of what you're telling us is that this area of cybersecurity really gives you a purpose that you can be passionate about because you're doing good for others.
Absolutely. And when you really get into the field of cybersecurity, honestly, sometimes you feel like you want to just sell your home and live in a cave, because it's like the Wild West with the incredible number of attacks on our country, not a daily basis, not an hourly basis, every minute of the day. That how we're a vulnerable, we're targeted by different countries, and here you've got with the veterans, they're trained to protect, and you feel like you're doing something. You're protecting your homeland when you're involved in cybersecurity, whether it's manufacturing, critical infrastructure, our economy. I mean, everything is vulnerable. You know, if a country breaches our security measures and takes down our power grid, that's a serious problem. And we need to have trained professionals out there that can dedicate themselves to protecting that.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I've seen those graphics before at some data storage centers of sort of the almost minute-by-minute attacks which occur, cyber attacks occur from around the world and where they're coming from. And it really is, it's like missile strikes. I mean, it's amazing to see the level of effort the bad guys put into trying to hack into everything, computers here in the United States. It's really quite surprising. Would you talk...
Oh, it is amazing, yeah.
Dr. Darga, would you talk a little bit about the Pinckney Cyber Training Institute, and I guess it's a hub of the Michigan Cyber Range, and I don't know what all that means, so tell me what it all means.
That's a good question, because it was in the 2015 Michigan Cyber Initiative, Our governor at the time, it was part of one of his strategies to expand the Michigan Cyber Range. And what that is that Merit Network, they own and operate 4,000 miles of fiber optic cable throughout the state of Michigan, connects all the universities, public schools, and they operate it as a unclassified private internet. So as being on the Michigan Cyber Range, we are on that unclassified private internet, so we can access a secure sites. For example, we have access to a secure sandbox where companies can actually come in and do software development, penetration testing of new products or networks. We have simulation activities through Merit Network that can help train people to defend, whether it's manufacturing, whether it's library, school. You know, we can simulate various network architectures so they can learn how to attack and then defend whatever network that they're going to be facing in the real world. So the Michigan Cyber Range, they've just opened, I believe it's their sixth hub in northern Michigan. So we all have the capability of providing training exercises, testing software, bringing in consultants for lectures on whether it's incident response. So we work as a team through Merit Network, and they provide tremendous resources for us. So we have the technical resources and we have the human resources that we work as a team together with Merit to provide this to the all the IT community.
As we come to the end here, Rich, can you tell me how long it's going to take for somebody who gets involved to get through the four courses and get through the curriculum?
Absolutely. So each of the courses are about 70 hours, and we have those 70 hours spread over 6 to 7 weeks. We're looking to launch the program sometime in October, and they'll be through all four of those courses by mid-June to the end of June. So less than a year, they'll have all those courses, and they'll also have an opportunity to sit for the different certification exams that their training is based on during that time.
If people want to know more and they think that, hey, I'm a veteran or a friend of a veteran and this might be right up his or her alley, how do they get some more information?
Well, yeah, the easiest way right now is to go to PinckneyCTI.org, our website. And we'll have the information posted there. Or they can actually email me directly if they would like, jdarga@pinckneycti.org.
Well, that's great. And I really appreciate Dr. Jim Darga and Rich Lamb, both with the Pinckney Cyber Training Institute, spending a little time with Veterans Radio today to talk about the cybersecurity market, the training and its application for veterans. Gentlemen, thanks for spending a little time with us today.
You're quite welcome.
Thank you.
And I want to thank everybody for listening to Veterans Radio today. I am Jim Fossone. It's been a pleasure to be your host. I'm a veterans disability lawyer at Legal Help for Veterans, and you can reach us at 800-693-4800 or legalhelpforveterans.com on the web. You can follow Veterans Radio on Facebook and listen to its podcasts and internet radio shows by going to veteransradio.net. And until next time, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
Veterans Radio needs you. If you like our shows that are informative, surprising stories, and relevant information on what's happening at the VA and the military, we'd like your support. Individual support of $5 to $50 a month or corporate sponsorship of $1,000 to $10,000 would be welcomed. You can go to veteransradio.net, click on the sponsorship or support tab, pay online, and keep Veterans Radio on the air.